ever told you what I wrote home to my parents when Daniel and I started dating?
I'm sure that's interesting. What'd you have to say?
I sent this long, gushy letter about how much we had in common, and then I closed it by saying, well, he's basically the male version of me.
Oh, gracious. I bet that opinion changed about a day after living together. I know that's when the differences between Barry and I started to be glaring.
And here's the thing. I missed how egotistical it was for me to say that his best quality was basically being my identical twin, which, of course, he totally is not. But for almost 30 years, I've been trying my darndest to make him just like me.
I might resemble that remark, and it sounds like we're not the only women who've tried to change our man. One of our listeners wrote us and said, my biggest problem is accepting others for who they are. Perfectionism nearly ruined my marriage. It's so easy to be hard on the people you love the most.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules.
Our guest today is Jill Savage, an author and speaker who is passionate about encouraging families. She's the founder of Hearts at Home and the author of 11 books, including No More Perfect Marriages, co-authored with her husband, Mark.
Jill is here to talk about her battle against the perfection infection, as she calls it.
Plus, she shares how discovering that Mark is an HSP, a highly sensitive person, has been a total game changer for their whole family. Well, we recovering perfectionists, we love your girlfriend voice, Jill. Two of your previous books were No More Perfect Moms and No More Perfect Kids, and then you have No More Perfect Marriages. So That last one, was that just the obvious next book, or was there a deeper reason for writing that one?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because from the time that No More Perfect Moms came out, the book that was being most requested was No More Perfect Marriages. People were saying, oh, you know, this book was so good. When are you going to write No More Perfect Marriages? Well, what many of them didn't know at that point in time, I did share openly in No More Perfect Moms that our marriage had been through a very difficult crisis. I shared about my husband leaving and then returning home. I shared all of that in No More Perfect Moms, but I had not shared about his infidelity. And so we were still healing from that. Sure. And honestly, I knew that was probably more his story to tell than even my story to tell. At least if I started telling it, he needed to be okay with it. So, so about 3 years after all of that happened, which would have been about 2 years after the No More Perfect Moms book came out. My husband said to me, and we were about 6 months outside of our healing. We saw a counselor for 18 months past all of that crisis. And my husband said, you know what? I feel like we're supposed to start sharing our story more openly.
So and brave.
I was like, okay. I mean, I was willing, but I wasn't sure if he was ever going to be willing. And so we actually did a 10-day No More Perfect Marriages series on our blog, or on my blog, but we did it together. And my blog readership went from 5,000 to 25,000 overnight. Yeah, that's how much I think the story was resonating with folks. But, you know, what we wanted with that blog series, as well as with the No More Perfect Marriages book, is we didn't really want it to be all about recovering from infidelity. That's just our story that we weave in and out. What we identified in our own marriage as we did our healing is we identified something that we called the slow fades. And these are places where a marriage, where two people in a marriage begin to be drawn apart by centimeters. And so therefore we don't notice it. We don't even realize that it's happening. And that's indeed what happened in our marriage. Because we even said we were speaking each other's love language. We went on dates. We went to marriage retreats. We did all the right things. How did we still end up with infidelity as part of our story? And when we had to look at that, it was the slow fades. So that's, we identified seven of those, and that's what we really wrote the No More Perfect Marriages blog series and now the No More Perfect Marriages book about, so that it applies to every marriage.
Wow.
Now, you talk in the book about a perfection infection that can weaken our marriages. What do you mean by that?
Right. Well, I introduced the concept of the perfection infection first in No More Perfect Moms, and mm-hmm. then we carried it out in No More Perfect Kids and continued in No More Perfect Marriages. I identify the perfection infection as what happens when we unfairly compare ourselves to others, and when we have unrealistic expectations of ourselves and others. Mm-hmm. And I would add to, we also unfairly compare our loved ones to mm-hmm. others. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are, the perfection infection is, it's always existed, okay, to some extent, probably at least in the modern age. But I think that particularly since the invention of cable television, since people are going to movies mm-hmm. far more often than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago, and since the invention of social media, which I personally love, I'm on social media, but if you don't recognize that the perfection infection is there, hmm. what you are comparing your real life to mm-hmm. doesn't even exist. Mm-hmm. And so therefore what happens is when the perfection infection enters in and we look at our real husband and he doesn't look anything like the guy in the movies, he doesn't behave anything like the novels that we read, our marriage doesn't look anything like what People magazine says that successful marriages, celebrity marriages look mm-hmm. like, then what happens is we become discontent mm. in our very real marriage. Mm. And we don't even realize that it's happening. Again, it's part of the fade. And we begin to think, oh, it's got to be better than this. And so we start looking even outside of our marriage, or we start comparing our real marriage to something that isn't real, and that discontent just keeps growing.
So you have another section of your book that I want to read that kind of reveals the way a perfectionist's brain works. And you said, my pride of thinking my way is the right way too often gets in the way. I want Mark's brain to work like mine, and when it doesn't, my tendency is to criticize or try to change him. I want Mark to like some of the same things I like, and when he doesn't, I work to change his perspective. And here's what I've learned. Mark's imperfections are my teachers. Tell us more about that.
Well, I'll tell you, this is that place that God has just really been growing me. And if you get right down to it, it comes down to pride. And pride often keeps us mired in our ways and determining that our ways are the right way, and pride begins to separate us in marriage. But when we can allow our spouse's differences to reveal to us our pride, to reveal to us other ways of thinking, all of a sudden, our world is expanded. Our ability to give grace is made bigger. And those become powerful teachers in our life, especially as we allow the marriage that we have, the very real marriage that isn't perfect, as we allow it to perfect us. That's what I'm talking about when I say that Mark's differences are my teachers, because God is using the places that we tend to kind of rub each other wrong. It's God's using that to mature me. He's using that to help me to think bigger. He's using that to help me to expand my perspective of this world. And I really think that marriage is about growing us up, if we'll allow that to happen.
Mm. Fantastic.
Now, throughout the book, you offer a variety of assessments to help identify differences. You call it the personal operating system inventory. Now, those of us who are recovering people pleasers, we work really hard to hide our differences. We try to pretend to be whoever other people want us to be. So why is it so important to identify our differences?
Oh, this is huge. And, you know, that's definitely where my husband sat. Okay. So my husband, major people pleaser. And he so hid his differences that he lost himself. And ultimately, in the midst of losing himself, we almost lost our marriage because he pushed himself down so much that then he just felt like he had to do something huge to break out of this, you know, 30-year cycle that he was in. And he didn't know how, you know, we were somewhat set in our roles within the marriage, and he didn't know how to even find his voice. And I'll tell you, he tells a story in the book, and this happened many years ago, when, we were having some sort of a disagreement. I don't even remember what it was about. And, he usually went passive in disagreements. And this time he didn't. He spoke up and he said what he thought about, you know, about the situation. And he, I mean, we weren't yelling at each other. We were just both kind of holding our ground. And when he held his ground, do you know what I did? I hauled off and kissed him.
It's sexy, isn't it?
And I was like, finally. Finally, I loved hearing your opinion. You know, it just, it was so huge. I wish he would have, you know, that was an affirmation to him, but that took so much courage on his part. And so what happened though, and he mentions this in the book, is that he would just let things slide. He would let things slide, but the truth was they weren't sliding. They were pooling. Pooling. That was building up, and it was eventually building a wall around his heart. And he didn't even recognize that was happening. But when he, temptation set in and he had this opportunity for this new relationship that in the initial weeks and months felt different, eventually it began to feel exactly the same. But you know, then that was his kind of open door. And when he really had to go back and look at that, and both of us learned the importance of, we have to have the courage to find our voice, to be honest with each other. And knowing that about him, I had to learn to be safe for him, to be honest. And I think that's really hard, especially when, you know, I mean, I am a strong personality, and I can disagree, and it doesn't, he can disagree with me, and that doesn't cause me to shirk back. I have to watch, because I have to understand how he's wired different than I am, and I have to make it really safe for him to be able to, you know, lift up his voice and bring out his voice so that he isn't that pleaser, and begins to be more secure in our relationship. And it truly does have some give and take.
So Jill, what kinds of steps did you take to make yourself a safe person?
That's a great question. So one is to learn how to listen without initially responding. So in essence, validating. Probably that's one of the biggest things I've had to learn how to do, is validate. And even if I disagree in the moment, even if he's expressing something to me and I disagree with it, what I've had to learn is that might not be the moment to disagree with. I might need to say, oh, okay, well, can you tell me more about that? Or can you tell me more about what you're thinking? Or, okay, you said this, explain that to me. So all I'm doing is letting him know that I'm hearing him, letting him know that I'm not even going to respond back. You have the floor. And so then if I feel like maybe I do want to give a response back, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll wait for that response. I'll say, can you give me 24 hours to think about this? And then maybe we could talk about it again, and I could share with you my thoughts. And so that, then it made it completely safe for him to put whatever he needed to put on the table, because there was no disagreement, there was no argument, there was no discussion. It was just, I want to hear you. And I would say that's probably the biggest thing, is I've had to learn to hear better than I was before. I was hearing to sometimes disagree, sometimes just dialogue. But either one of those, for him, working his courage up, that, you know, didn't always help him to feel safe. And so giving it a little bit more time, letting him truly have the floor and validating has been a big difference.
Oh, I feel like I learned so much that I need to apply just in those few minutes that you explained. Oh, that's so good.
You know, Jill, as I read your manuscript, I kept thinking to myself in the early pages, Mark sounds like an HSP. He sounds like an HSP. He sounds like an. And then I got to the page where you guys said he's an HSP. He's a highly sensitive person. I'm like, yes, eureka moment. So, and I'm so fascinated because I don't know that I've actually met. I know that highly sensitive people are in equal proportions in female and male in our society. But this is really the first time I've read about a husband being an HSP. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious from your perspective, how has knowing that your spouse is a highly sensitive person, how has this changed your relationship?
Oh my gosh. It's a game changer. Yeah. It really was. Because I kept wanting him to be more like me and expecting that he could. Mm-hmm. And we knew, I mean, we had very different upbringings. Mm-hmm. You know, I was raised in a home that was full of love and encouragement and validation. He was raised in a home that was very broken, and he was raised primarily by his grandmother, and there was abuse in the home. And so therefore he never, part of the reason he still doesn't have a voice is he learned early on, your voice doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Your opinion doesn't matter. And so, you know, in his formative years. So we knew all of that, and we always thought that was contributing to our differences. But when I really, the other thing I knew though, he has such a tender heart.
Yeah.
He takes on people's feelings and emotions. And we've known that, you know, that's, we've often identified that as the spiritual gift of mercy. Mm. But when I learned about, and we learned about HSP recently, it was while we were writing the book.
Okay? Really?
Yes. Okay, so it was while we were doing that, when I learned about it, and then I shot the test over to him, and he took it, and it was not a surprise to either one of us, but it was huge for him to go, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, this is the way I'm wired, yeah. And I do have, like, extra antenna in this world.
Yeah.
And so it was huge, and I think, you know, it has helped me to better accept him for who he is. I think that that's been huge. And then we've identified, we have one daughter out of our five children that is also an HSP, and she has a daughter that is a four-year-old, and it is so obvious already that we're with that. So it has been life-changing for us. I wish I would have understood it when I was raising my daughter. Mm-hmm. I didn't. But now she's 25, a mother herself. And I'll tell you, I interact with her differently because I better understand her now.
How so?
I'm not highly emotional. Mm-hmm. So I used to see her being highly emotional as a fault. Mm-hmm. You know, she's very artistic, mm-hmm. and she feels the world around her. She makes decisions based upon those feelings. Mm-hmm. And I used to think that was a mm-hmm. shortcoming. But now I've realized, no, this is the way that she's wired. And so therefore I oftentimes, if she's telling me something, maybe she's sharing her dreams or she's sharing mm-hmm. something she wants to do. In the past, I would be instead of a dream maker, I was a dream taker.
Oh no.
And so now I just roll along with her and listen. Sometimes I'll say, do you want thoughts or feedback? Or are you just sharing? And she'll be like, I'm sharing. And that's okay. Good. Because I tend to be a fixer. Mm-hmm. With her being highly sensitive and emotional, I've just had to recognize that sometimes she just wants to share that. And I don't need to be a dream taker from her.
That's beautiful. And I hear the shift even from the label that we put on people, from drama queen, which is so negative,
yes,
to strong and sensitive. Like, Sherry is labeling it. You know, you shift the label and all of a sudden your thinking about that person shifts.
Yes. Yes. It changes your relationship when you can make that shift. Because then, I mean, let's be honest. Even if you're not criticizing them to their face, you're criticizing them in your head. Mm-hmm. When I say it's a game changer, I'm not criticizing my husband in my head anymore. Mm. I mean, I still criticize him in my head because I'm human, yeah. You know, but for the things and the amount of things mm-hmm. that I used to. And I'm doing the same thing with my daughter. And I think that that has changed the dynamics in both of those relationships.
Well, and I'm hearing it in your voice as you're talking about them. I'm hearing warmth and admiration, and you can't fake that. those are going to be tells if you still feel a certain way about them. So I just want to say I admire your willingness to change, because that's hard. I mean, for somebody who's logical and with your personality, to accept this body of information rather quickly, I just want to say thank you on behalf of HSPs everywhere. We need champions. And so as I read through the rest of the book, I was like, thank you, Jill. Thank you. You get us. You don't have to become one of us. You don't have to be like us. But thank you so much for being so intentional about mm-hmm. making it okay to be sensitive and strong. They go together.
And you know what I would add is I think that there are elements to my husband, my daughter's wiring that does make me be a better person. Mm. And I've learned to trust them. Mm. Like, for instance, my husband is very intuitive, mm-hmm. always has been very intuitive. And so he would say something like, we'd be at the dinner table and, you know, have dinner as a family. And he and I would be cleaning up the dishes. And he would say, do you think Austin's okay? And I'd say, yeah. Well, if he wasn't okay, he'd say something. And he'd be like, I don't know. I don't know. I think something's weighing on him. Mm-hmm. Well, he's almost always right. Mm-hmm. And I am very much I take things at face value.
Yeah.
I don't read body language, mm-hmm. But he does. And mm-hmm. so I've had to learn to trust him in those things. Honestly, then pay attention. Like when he'll say that, then I kind of think back and go, you know what? I need to learn to pay attention to some of those things. I'll never see them the way he does. Mm-hmm. I'm not wired that way, but I can trust him when he says, I'm a little concerned about this. And I can go, you know what? He sees things I don't. And so that's one way he compliments me. And I think that's valuable.
Mm, absolutely. Do you have any closing words of wisdom for our listeners who are struggling with perfectionism and people-pleasing in their marriages?
My biggest words of wisdom would be, let's stop looking for the perfect marriage and let's start allowing marriage to perfect us and to become more like Christ each and every day.
Head over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode43 to enter this week's drawing for a copy of No More Perfect Marriages.
You'll also find links to practical resources from Jill and Mark Savage, this week's Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and transcript.
We hope you've enjoyed episode number 43 of Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules.
Join us next week as we share what we learned from our conversation with Jill.
For today, grow your grit, embrace God's grace, and when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it.
Well, you've got another part of your book, and I want to read a little section that reveals the... Oh, so sorry.
What in the world?
That'll be an outtake.
Sorry, yeah. Come here. Stop, Hildy.
I love it.
Come here. Oh. We have a guest in our house today. Hold on. So sorry. And so she is on high alert. Okay. Let me start again. She has to protect me. All right.